February 12, 2019, Board of Adjustment meeting will come to order. Center, will you call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Clethrow?
Here.
Ms. John?
Here.
Ms. Hammond?
Here.
Mr. Norgard?
Here.
Chairman Waters?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Is there a motion for to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Second to approve the agenda. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The agenda is approved. The November 13, 2018 minutes were distributed to the members of the board. Are there any corrections or additions? Is there a motion to approve the November 13, 2018?
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second to approve the November 13, 2018 minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. The minutes are approved. Public hearings.
Staff.
Will the court reporter please swear in the staff?
I didn't take anything.
Okay.
Not yet.
Case number 53-2019, a request by Marjorie Lewis, attorney on behalf of Raider Hospitality Company, LLC, lessee and occupant, and Hewlett Descendants, LLC, owner, to grant a 20-inch design adjustment to permit the height of the finished floor elevation of a proposed new structure to be constructed at 120 South 6th Street, known as My House, the Backyard, to be higher than permitted, per section 29-4.2E12B1A of the Unified Development Code. Has a notice been properly advertised?
Yes, it has.
Has the property been posted with a notice of public hearing?
Yes, it has.
Have the parties in interest been notified?
Yes, they have.
Have there been any inquiries?
No, there have not.
Would the person making the application to the board please come forward and state your name and address and be sworn in?
I'm Marjorie Lewis. I'm an attorney with offices at 601 East Broadway, Suite 203, Columbia, Missouri. I do. As we indicated, I'm here tonight. We have two applicants, Raider Hospitality Company, LLC, and Hewlett Descendants, LLC. They're both Missouri limited liability companies. Hewlett Descendants, LLC is the owner of the subject property that's in the M-DT zoning district located at 120 South 6th Street, Columbia, Missouri. The applicant, Raider Hospitality, LLC, is the lessee and occupant of the property and the owner of the business at the property known as My House, the Backyard. Raider Hospitality LLC proposes to construct a new sports bar and an entertainment facility with access onto 6th Street and also access from a public alley to the north that will connect an indoor sports bar at the front of the property with an outdoor entertainment venue at the rear of the property. The proposed arrangement and floor elevation allow for both the indoor sports bar and the outdoor sports bar portions to be accessible to all patrons. As mentioned, the proposed new building ground floor elevation is more than 37 inches above the average fronting sidewalk elevation, which does not comply with section 29-4.2E1 2B1A of the revised ordinances of the City of Columbia, Missouri. Such section requires an MDT zoning along an urban general street frontage that the ground story finished elevation, floor elevation, shall be no lower than the average fronting exterior sidewalk elevation and no higher than 18 inches above the average fronting sidewalk elevation. Pursuant to 29-6.4E, because the requested variance in the required ground floor elevation is greater than a 5% variance. The variance cannot be granted by the director, but is instead in front of the Board of Adjustment. The applicants are seeking a variance to allow an adjustment of the form-based controls of Section 29-4.2 to allow the finished first floor elevation to exceed the code requirement by up to 20 inches. Because this is asking for an adjustment of form-based controls, there's a different standard that applies than it does to usual Board of Adjustment variance matters. The appropriate criteria, there are two of criteria that must be met. The first is Section 29.6.4E1. And we believe that the variance sought meets the criteria in that section because the proposed adjustment will not result in development that is inconsistent with the intended character of the MDT district or the regulating plan for the block face, including the subject property, or the block faces immediately across the street from the applicant's property. Secondly, it's appropriate under the criteria of Section 29-6.4E2 in that the proposed adjustment will result in a building and site design of equal or superior quality and visual interest to that required by the application of the form-based controls in Section 29-4.2. Now, if I may, I just want to get some housekeeping matters out of the way, and so I would like to admit some exhibits.
Of course.
All right. I know this is everyone's favorite part, but I'm going to go through the exhibits. So, Exhibit 1 is the City of Columbia locator map for the subject property, and it does have the subject property marked, and the approximate boundary of that property is marked, and it shows that it's in the MDT zoning district. Exhibit 2 is a true and accurate copy of the deed conveying the property to the applicant, Hewlett Descendants, LLC. Exhibit 3 is a true and accurate copy of the original submission to the city for the construction of improvements at 120 South 6th Street. Exhibit 4 is a true and accurate copy of the letter from Timothy Tutte with the City of Columbia, Missouri, denying the proposed construction. Applicant's Exhibit 5 is a true and accurate copy of the Notice of Appeal and application to the Board of Adjustment for a variance, as we've discussed. And I will call attention to Exhibit B to the application is a true and accurate copy of the existing site, or is a true and accurate copy of a photograph of the existing site. Exhibit C to the application is a true and accurate copy of the proposed site plan. Exhibit D to the application are photos of the existing property and surrounding properties, and they are fair and accurate representations of the property as they currently exist. Exhibit E to the application is the initially proposed 6th Street elevation. Exhibit F to the application is the initially proposed 3D view from the northwest of the proposed construction. Applicant's Exhibit 6 is a correct, true and correct list of the parties in interest as were required to receive notice of the application today. Applicant's Exhibit 7 is the published notice and the letter of notice to interested parties. Applicant's Exhibit 8 is a certified copy of Section 29-1.11 of the city ordinances, being a part of the Unified Development Code, and this consists of the definitions. Applicant's Exhibit 9 is a certified copy of Section 29-2.1 of the city ordinances, which contains the zoning districts. The M-DT zoning district is on page 2342. Applicant's Exhibit 10 is a certified copy of Section 29-4.2, which is M-DT form-based controls of the City of Columbia ordinances. Applicant's Exhibit 11 is a certified copy of Section 29-6.1, Powers and Duties of the Board of Adjustment. And again, that's part of the City of Columbia ordinances. Exhibit 12 is a certified copy of Section 29-6.4 of the City ordinances, and that pertains to the procedures to obtain variances and adjustment of form-based controls. Applicant's Exhibit 13 is a certified copy of the Board of Adjustment Rules. Applicant's Exhibit 14 is a true and accurate copy of the staff report issued by the City of Columbia staff regarding this application. Applicant's Exhibit 15 is a memorandum in support of our application, and it also contains revised renderings of the building that were created after discussion with staff members about what might be appropriate. And applicant's Exhibit 16 is an aerial map from the Boone County Assessor's website, on which we have marked the neighboring property owners so that you can get an idea of who owns what property. At this time, I would ask that Exhibits 1 through 16 be received in evidence.
Loud.
As we discussed, and I'm sure legal counsel, your legal counsel will elaborate on, the standard for a variance in this case is the standard that I earlier mentioned that's in Section 29.6.4E, Roman numeral 1 and Roman numeral 2. It's not the traditional standard that's in 29-6.4D, which we've all heard a million times, and I won't go through it all, but practical difficulty, unnecessary hardship, and the associated criteria. Again, the applicants are seeking a variance and hereby request a variance to allow an adjustment of the form-based controls of Section 29-4.2 to allow the finished floor elevation to exceed the code requirement by up to 20 inches. And I'm not going to speak to the technical aspects of that. Nick Borgmeyer, who's an architect with Simon Oswald's Architects, is here to speak about that. We also have Dan Rader, who's the manager of the applicant, Rader Hospitality, LLC. And I'm going to let Mr. Borgmeyer come up and take the lead on explaining the details. And certainly, if you have any questions, any of us are happy to answer them, particularly Nick.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Nick Borgmeyer. I'm an architect with Simon Oswald Architecture. Our offices are at 2801 Woodard Drive, Suite 103, here in Columbia, Missouri, 65202. I'm going to mainly refer to Exhibit 15, which is a memorandum, kind of the explicit version of what I'm talking about, as well as the attachments that Ms. Lewis referred to, some updated elevations, renderings, as well as some civil site plans. What I want to talk about is what Mr. Rader is doing with his project and how it pertains to the intent of the Unified Development Code regarding the MDT area. So his main three objectives that we're trying to accomplish is to create a strong relationship between the 6th Street building and the alley that borders the property to the north. As you know, he owns the property that shares that alley that faces 7th Street. This 6th Street property is complementing it. It's wholly separate, but it shares that alley over to the 6th Street property. We also want to make sure that this facility provides accessibility to all the patrons and the staff that use it within and gaining access onto the property. And we want to avoid things that the MDT is trying to keep out, non-interactive sort of visual facades that are uninteresting for the downtown area. And we're looking at it holistically, both on the 6th Street facade as well as the north alleyway. So I'm going to go in a little bit more detail on each of those, and I'll try to reference our exhibits that we've attached here to help visually. They should all be in paper in front of you, but I've got some of them up here on the screen as well. So, of course, we want to agree to the most extent possible with the current-based form controls. My understanding is that their intent for the downtown district is to create a lively, pedestrian-oriented environment with attractive and functional public and private spaces of a wide variety of uses. Mr. Rader's property is looking to create a variety of venue types, so an indoor sports bar facility, an outdoor sports bar, as well as an outdoor small-scale performance venue. And you can see on the three-dimensional drawing helps understand a little bit better. Bottom right of the drawing is the 6th Street facade. So that's the building, the indoor sports bar. There are outdoor components to it that are the outdoor sports bar, and sort of behind it to the rear of the property is the outdoor entertainment venue for small concerts. We want to arrange this facility in a way that's flexible for the use of it. Being a smaller facility, the width of the property is only 65 feet. So it is in the MDT's regulations eyes, kind of a smaller facade, a smaller property. We want to arrange our property in such a way that it's flexible in use. So, for example, the indoor sports bar space can be arranged in plan and elevation in such a way that it can be used for secondary seating to support the outdoor small-scale performance venue. And we want to make sure that this building achieves the correct level of visual street interaction, both of people looking into the facility as well as people in the facility looking out, and that the arrangement accommodates a correct level of audible street separation between the outdoor entertainment venue at the rear of the property, which is somewhat buffered by the building, and the 6th Street space. As mentioned by Ms. Lewis, these facade renderings that we've included have some adjustments from what we sent in for the application in an effort to create a design that's visually attractive at the proposed increased elevation of the floor level. You can see on this particular drawing, this elevation on the bottom, you can see the dashed line that represents the change in elevation across the front of the building that the sidewalk happens across the sidewalk. So there's 36 inches of change in elevation from the high side or the left on this drawing to the bottom or the right side. The other thing that's happening in the site that you can't see in this particular drawing is that the rear of the property that we're utilizing for the outdoor.
Mr. Borgmeyer, yes. Can you make sure to speak into the microphone so that our court reporter can hear properly?
Yes, thank you. We'll get it figured out here. The rear of the property is about, yes, thank you, 1'7" above it. So we're sloping towards the street and sloping down the street. So our proposed building elevation, first floor, ground floor building elevation is 17 inches above the high end of the sidewalk, which is already 18 inches above the average grade of the sidewalk. So in some scenarios, that would create sort of an uninteresting facade between the ground elevation and the street level below. We've taken some of the recommendations of the city staff and included some visual relief areas that would include a brick pattern here. We show it in a basket weave pattern. You see this in a lot of historic buildings to create that sort of visual interest at eye level for people passing by. We've also added what is a false window, because there is a bathroom behind it, that you would not be able to see into the bathroom, but it would create that continuity on the street facade and create that continued visual interest. The second drawing shows that in a little bit more experiential view. If you were standing at 6th Street on the northwest corner of the property, you can see the entry. There is a perforated metal screen entrance that will be well lit there at the corner, and it faces 6th Street, but it also faces to the north, to the alleyway, and you can see to the left of the drawing, start to see down the alleyway. We also want to design the project in such a way that it considers how the business interacts with the alleyway to the north, in addition to the 6th Street facade. The ground floor of the indoor building is approximately 10.5 inches above the alleyway to the north, and the whole property, if we looked at both the indoor and the outdoor space, comes within about 4 inches of the average grade of that north alleyway. So we took into account the UDC's definition of floor level to think about this from a more holistic point. Street level, according to section 29-1.11, the floor level definition out of 29-1.11 refers to the street level, and that it shall be the lowest floor level in a building in which no less than 51% of the interior side of the business adjacent to a street or alley is above the adjacent grade. In our proposed design, 100% of it is above the adjacent grade. If we were to look at it in the requested, and what the UDC requires to have it 18 inches above the average street elevation sidewalk on 6th Street, we'd be right at that threshold of approximately 50% of the building below grade if we were including both the alley street the alley elevation and the 6th Street elevation. Additionally, that definition goes on to say that the floor level shall be determined for each elevation where buildings are situated on sloping lots and are adjacent to more than one street or alley, and that the level of the business may differ from one elevation to another. Our business elevation indoor floor elevation is all one single elevation. But I want to point out that the standards for the MDT district. The ground story finished floor elevation requirements shall be measured from the average exterior sidewalk elevation at the required building line. In this case, the required building line is 6th Street only. And that within 30 feet of the required building, required building line, not necessarily the alley. So our intent is to design a facility that holistically looks at both the 6th Street facade in relationship as well as the alley usage to the north. So with that, we intend and assume that the city would prefer to keep the courtyard at the rear of the property that is in the space between the outdoor sports bar area and the outdoor stage. We intend to keep that roughly at the alley's street level elevation. If we were to push the building down the ground floor elevation to within 18 inches of the 6th Street sidewalk average elevation, we would effectively require creating a retaining wall at the north side of the property to allow for our elevations to make up the difference between the edges of our property within the courtyard space. That would be approximately 18 to 24 inches below that north alley grade. We also want to utilize the public alley as a space for pedestrian-friendly access to the venues. The way the venues are set up, again, the outdoor sports bar, the indoor sports bar, and the outdoor entertainment area, they could be used all in conjunction or independently. So we wanted to make sure we provided independent access to that and accessible access to each of that. The other thing that the alleyway provides is sort of queuing space, if you will, for lines that may be waiting to get into the venue that avoid clogging the sidewalks at 6th Street by utilizing that alley space. And from the owner's experience with the 7th Street property, many of their patrons do use the alleyway as the main entrance to their existing facility. We anticipate that be the same case for this new facility. So really, we're trying to consider the experience of the proposed structure collectively along both the 6th Street facade and the North Alley. And our thought is that addressing both of those, the alley and the 6th Street facade, we are creating a superior quality design at the site and the facade that creates visual interest on both of those, alley and 6th Street. Additionally, from a more of a functional or technical aspect, we're trying to maintain how we drain stormwater off the site. As we start to push the building down, our tolerances for ponding, for flow lines from that inner courtyard get tighter and tighter. We do not have below grade stormwater access at this site, so all of our stormwater has to daylight to the southwest corner, just above the MU building. Also, additionally, if we were to lower the building, we would start to encourage or set up situations where stormwater from the alleyway may be encouraged to enter onto the property, into the building, or both the outdoor space or the indoor space. And then lastly, from a functional aspect, our current proposed arrangement provides for the proper walking and service connections back to the existing facility that is on the 7th Street property. Have any questions regarding any of those points?
Questions from the board? Thank you, Mr. Borgmeyer. Any other, anybody else wish to speak on behalf of the applicant? Any other questions from the board? That's the case. If there's anyone wishing to, oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Hammond.
So yes. Is the alley Can there be parking in the alley? Are vehicles allowed in this alley?
Mr. Rader, you also need to be sworn in.
I'm Dan Rader. It's 6106 Ivory Lane, Columbia, Missouri. The alleyway is technically, it's a public street, basically, and the city does not allow us to park on it. If someone were to park on it, they're often ticketed.
And is there, do you anticipate spillover from your small venue facility into the alley?
Yes. So it's not a very trafficked area of downtown, and so most of our patrons come from the east. And so I would say probably 95% or more of our customers come from 7th Street and walk down this alley and enter sort of at the rear of the existing 7th Street building. And so we anticipate that would continue. So vast majority of our customers will come down the alley and enter either at this front entrance on the corner of the alley and 6th Street, or we may actually put the main entrance at the back of the building where the courtyard starts. And so we felt like it made sense to make sure that the whole alley side was very active and felt like inviting, as opposed to lowering it down, feeling like you're in a hole.
And are all three entrances and access points handicapped accessible?
Yes, they are. And we felt that the way we designed it was made it the most accessible, if you will. We have the fewest amount of elevation changes from one area to the next, the fewest amount of ramps or steps that anyone would have to go up to. We just have one ramp, and all the other entrances and exits are at the grade of the alley.
And then the fifth window that was added is actually fronting a bathroom. I mean,
yeah, behind that, I think technically it's sort of our mechanical room with like the water riser and stuff, but there's a bathroom back there. And so we decided, the city sort of recommended that we add that to create more visual interest on the front with the five windows as opposed to just a brick wall. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Rader. Any other questions from the board? Is there anybody else who would wish to speak in favor of the application? Anybody wishing to speak in opposition to the application? Comments from staff?
Yes, Mr. Chair, on the board. As discussed earlier, you are considering a major amendment of the form-based controls of the MDT. This is contained in Chapter 29.4.2 of the UDC. As Ms. Lewis mentioned, the criteria for considering this sort of variance, known as a design adjustment, is contained within Section 29.6.4E of the UDC, and you do have a cheat sheet in front of you to help you with those two criteria that we'll go through here in a moment. I also want to start off by saying that staff's evaluation is of the documents that were provided to us with the application, and so that's what my staff report will be based upon this evening. It's a little bit unusual to have a different design presented at the meeting. We will do our best to accommodate what has been provided in our discussion analysis this evening, but my staff report was based upon what was provided with the application, so I just want to make that clear. As we've heard from the applicant this evening, they are looking for a variance to permit the height of the finished floor elevation of the new structure, known as My House, the Backyard, to be higher than what is allowed under 29.42E1IIB1A of the Unified Development Code. So effectively, because only 18 inches above the finished fronting sidewalk elevation is allowed, they're asking to go no more than 38 inches above what that finished elevation would be. So that's effectively about 20 inches of difference. The intent of the form-based controls for the UDC for this particular area, which is the urban general classification, is to provide a basic urban street frontage that allows multi-story buildings directly at the sidewalk with one or more entrances and windows across the facade, and then a combination of uses from commercial to residential, municipal to retail, and restaurants. So we're really talking about two different things when we talk about the intent of the urban general form. So one is form and one is function, otherwise known as use and design. So the use of the proposed venue as an entertainment venue absolutely fits the eclectic intent of the UDC for this downtown area. When we go to talk a little bit more about the design, that's where those two evaluation criteria will become more important as in our discussion. This evening. So to break it down more simply, having those multiple entrances and windows across the facade and being at that sidewalk elevation really allows for that interaction between the street and patrons in the building. So folks can see in, they can see out. It's good both from a pedestrian perspective. It's interesting, it's lively, you want to go use the venue. It's also good for the business because folks see what's going on, it can entice them. Instead of having a dead wall or an empty storefront, you really have that interaction with the street. That helps to create a pedestrian environment. As discussed on page 2 of the staff report, the intent of the MDT as a whole, not just the urban general section, is to have that really lively, eclectic business environment. It's very pedestrian friendly, there's high degrees of accessibility. And so their point about having accessible entrances is well noted within the staff report and the application, that that is one of the intents of the MDT zone overall. So the use intent is met, and then also that accessibility intention is met. Where we really start to have concerns with their initial application is really that interaction between the street and then the pedestrian. So as the finished floor grade starts to separate, going from the northern section of the western elevation down to the south to the MU building, you start to get that grade separation. And so as proposed in the initial renderings, the fourth and final window, the window bottom seal starts to either exceed or be at 6 feet or higher, which can be challenging for the average pedestrian to look in. Now, this is something that does exist in the downtown and some of the existing buildings. For instance, the unfortunately, the 7th and Broadway corner facade of this building has that same effect. So as you walk out this evening, you can see how very real that blank wall space is when you've got 6 or 7 feet in height before you can see into a window. Where they've got the existing fourth and final southernmost window would be kind of a banquet or seating area. And so folks who are in that area would then be looking down on the sidewalk rather than looking to and from. So the impact of having that blank wall for the pedestrian, you know, can't see in, and then also effectively anybody who's in the restaurant would be kind of looking down. So you do have sort of that degradation of that intended impact of visualization between the street and the inside of the building, that relationship. Now, in order to start to mitigate that, we do note that design can go a long way in helping to break up that blank wall. So, for instance, interesting building materials, fenestration, which is, of course, clear glass that you can look through, and other interesting design features can help to break that up. The applicant did note that this particular facade is less than 100 feet, and so the MDT does grant a little bit of an exception to allow much more minimal breaking up of the wall. So any buildings over 100 feet in length are then required to start to put in some design elements that would then break up and articulate the facade a little bit more. I mention this now because I do want to come back to this point when we talk about the revised drawing in our conversation. So going back to those two criteria that I mentioned that we must use in order to consider a major amendment to the MDT for a design adjustment. The first one is that the proposed adjustment will not result in development that is inconsistent with the intended character of the MDT district or the regulating plan for this block face. So as I mentioned, this is an urban general frontage. All the way around this property on the adjacent street facade is still the urban general for this area. So what we're looking at here is that there's lively pedestrian-oriented environment. It's attractive. There are functional public and private spaces, and there are a variety of uses. In evaluating this criteria, we really looked more to the second criteria as we felt like it was a supporting factor in deciding whether or not this particular building as presented was consistent with the intended character of this block face. And so that criteria as is presented before you and in the staff report is that the proposed adjustment will result in a building and site design of equal or superior quality and visual interest to that required by the application of the form-based controls. So to break that down, we need to decide if the building as presented or proposed is of a higher quality than what's required in the code. So the applicant mentioned that that lowering the building would require extensive regrading and utility relocation. So that can be expensive, as we know, and might be something that we would consider if we were considering hardship criteria. As previously mentioned, we're not considering that this evening. This is different criteria. But it is something that we don't disagree with by any means. Wanting to provide more accessible entrances is definitely not a bad thing by any means, but the applicant has not stated that it's impossible to provide the required accessible entrances, just more difficult if the building is lowered. So if the building were lowered to address the finished elevation issue that they're asking for that design adjustment for, there might be some reductions in terms of accessibility. There might be some additional costs, but overall you'd have a building that would meet the code, not requiring any variance or design adjustments. So the thought here is there anything that is superior in the quality and design based upon what's required in the code? In this regard, we looked at the building based upon what was required in the code. So the second floor fenestration requirements are met and exceeded by the design that was presented to us. When we looked at the first story fenestration, it was right at what would be required by the code, so 33%. And so in our mind, that really was not a superior quality or superior design than what the bare minimum of the code would provide. As I said, they could take this exact same design, lower it down, get rid of this design adjustment request, and it would be exactly what was required, at least in terms of first floor fenestration by the code. So in our minds, what would help us to find the design more appropriate could be offering up additional design elements to provide that connection and interaction with the street. So as I said, under the first criteria, we want to make sure that the intent of the code in terms of that visual interest and interaction with the street is met. And so in order to meet criteria one and two, we really felt that there needed to be an enhanced design in order to provide that. And so as presented with the original application, we didn't see anything that exceeded the code in terms of things like fenestration or design elements, things that would provide enhanced interaction for both the pedestrian and folks looking out, both in terms of that real functional aspect and then also that form or design-based aspect as well. So I mentioned that we were looking at really the functionality that was intended by the district, but then also the design characteristics that were considered by this district. And so as presented with the application, the demonstratives that were provided to us, while we understood some cost considerations and some challenges in terms of accessibility, we support the use, certainly meets the intent of the code without having further criteria or further evidence that this particular building and this particular site exceeded that was required by the code and also then therefore met the intent of the district. We found it challenging to support the design adjustment as presented. I understand that they've provided a different demonstrative that does, at least on face value, appear to get at some of what staff was looking at, so that would be, I think, up to this board to critically evaluate. We're happy to help you with any motion that you might make tonight if any sort of adjustment might be desired by the board.
I would like to, before we close the staff report, just point out that on your demonstratives that you did have provided you, Exhibit E1 and the notations that have been placed on that, I think, reiterate Ms. Bacon's statements that an enhancement of the actual fenestration, which is a requirement, while the baying of the building, as we would refer to it, since this was less than 100 feet in length, the parcel is only 65 feet wide, we were not required to bay the building, meaning you were creating distinct architectural treatments over the course of its facade. They were required to do fenestration, and the minimum fenestration on ground floor per the frontage standard is 33%. If you look at Exhibit E1, as we've had an opportunity to examine that since the applicant made their presentation, the fenestration has gone from the 33% that was originally proposed to 57% of the ground story facade. With the additions of the architectural elements that have been added, slat or the canopies, awnings that would be over the windows, the addition of the fifth window, the pilastering of the building, and then the mixture of the actual brick, those are what have pushed the building beyond the 33%. It has been an enhancement toward the frontage of the building itself. The board has its choice to make this evening as it relates to the exhibit that has been submitted. As Mr. Borgmeyer indicated, this rendering has been offered in response to our staff comments that were in the code. There were suggestions as to how potentially the applicant could pursue enhancing the actual fenestration with a particular percentage established as well. Based on our review of the exhibit E1 that was provided to you this evening, it would appear that the applicant has made a attempt to address those concerns, and the board should take that into consideration as it deliberates on its decision at this point. Fortunately, we are receiving this evening without opportunity to review it, but given what I am looking at here, overseeing our operation and having a brief conversation with Mr. Teddy, this would appear to be, at least from a staff perspective, meeting a general intent of superior design, much more enhanced beyond what the original application had. And the board may want to consider that as part of its consideration. If you do choose to make a recommendation this evening in favor of this project, we request that you refer to exhibits E1 and E2 that are dated 2/12/2019 as part of your final vote, so we are capable of being able to have these exhibits attached to whatever recommendation you may make. If you have any questions, Ms. Bacon or myself will be more than
happy to. Mr. Chair, may I ask one question of staff?
Sure.
So just so the audience and the record clearly understands, staff's position is that had you been reviewing Exhibit E1, you would have recommended approval of the design adjustment?
If I will speak for staff on that, and yes, I believe we would have, given the consideration of what is along the associated block frontages on 6th Street. This is in a consistent fashion to what our expectation would have been for a superior design in relationship to what is there. While we acknowledge that the height of the finished floor elevation is greater than what would otherwise be permitted, the architectural treatment of the building and then its interaction and its uses would fully fulfill the intent of the MDT and its goals and objectives.
Okay.
What were the two exhibits, E1 and
E2? E2.
These two.
Okay.
Ms. Hammond, you had a question?
No.
I was just going to answer that. Any other questions of staff? Thank you. Any response from the applicant to the staff report? Ms. Liz? Please.
Yes, Ms. Liz, you are under oath.
Real quickly, I wanted to refer to applicant's exhibit 16. We didn't go over it much earlier, but that was just the document showing the surrounding properties. You know, we've got Columbia College, a big parking garage, University of Missouri, University of Missouri, University of Missouri, University of Missouri. And so I think that, you know, personally speaking, I just think that's an attractive addition to what's located there. And secondarily, legal counsel and staff might disagree with me, but I note the difference in language between 29-6.4E Roman numeral 1 versus Roman numeral 2. Roman numeral 1 refers to the applicant's block face and the surrounding block faces. 2 refers to, states, the proposed adjustment will result in a building and site design of equal or superior quality and visual interest to that required by the application of the form-based controls. And I think that goes back to what Mr. Borgmeyer was saying, kind of looking at this as a holistic approach. Holistically speaking, we think that the building overall is a very attractive design and certainly equal or superior quality and visual interest to what would have been provided if there was exact compliance with the code. I don't have anything further.
Any other questions of Ms. Lewis? Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak on behalf of the applicant? In that case, I will close the public hearing. Comments from legal.
I'll be brief. First of all, I want to thank Ms. Lewis and the applicant for helping build a very thorough record. Thank you for doing that. And I also want to thank Ms. Bacon and Ms. Lewis again for highlighting the criteria that we are using tonight. As both have correctly stated, we are not using the traditional variance standards that are criteria that we usually talk about. We have two specific ones, as highlighted by 29-6.4E1, subsection 1 and 2. That's all I have. So unless the board would like for me to repeat what those two criteria are that you are considering, there are no further comments from legal.
Thank you, Mr. Caldera. Comments from the staff or from the board?
I do. Thoughts? I personally think this is an elegant solution to a very difficult problem because the grade goes from such a difference from front to back, from, you know, along the alley and then down the front. I mean, even just down the front, it goes down quite a bit. And I think it's well done. And I've only really looked at this latest version, but I like it.
I agree. We're not in Kansas.
Not sure what that means, but I'm...
Well, it means it's not flat as this tabletop we're talking about.
Now I understand. Thank you.
So... I intend to support this. I think it's a great solution.
I'd just like to observe that in our procedures, this might be the only case where we have subjective liberties. In other cases, it seems that when we use the traditional procedures, they're spelled out and well-defined, and it's easy to say yes or no. To me, it makes it a little more difficult just because it is such a subjective. What is superior? Still pondering that, but it does. I mean, what we see here in Exhibit E1 and E2 is definitely an improvement over the original application.
Superior to the original.
Right. The only thing that I wasn't crazy about in the original elevation was the blank wall, where now there's a fifth window, so that was an improvement in my opinion. So I'm glad to see that. I also agree that it's bizarre to have one of the criteria be so subjective.
Mr. Chairman, can you make sure to speak into the microphone so that I apologize, but making sure that the court reporter can hear.
I will, thank you. But I think it's a good project. I think if our criterion in this case is it a good project and does it fit in the neighborhood, I think it does.
Definitely.
Any other comments? Motion would be accepted.
I move that we approve the adjusted design as shown on E1 and E2, exhibits E1 and E2.
Dated.
Oh, right. Dated 2/12/2019.
No. Mr. Zinner, you need more clarity?
We need slightly more clarity, if I may. I think what you're searching for is you are recommending that the board approve a design adjustment to propose construction at 120 South 6th Street, such that the finished floor elevation may exceed the UDC standards by a maximum of 20 inches, and the design of said structure to be constructed shall be consistent with the architectural elevation and rendering as provided in exhibits E1 and E2 dated 2/12/2019.
What he said.
I second right. that.
Well said, Mr. Zinner. Anybody need me to repeat that?
No. Did we get that for the record? Correct.
Okay, so there's a motion and a second. We'll take a roll call.
Roll call. In the matter of case number 53-2019, Mr. Clitheroe.
Yes.
Ms. John.
Yes.
Ms. Hammond.
Yes.
Mr. Norgaard.
Yeah.
Mr. Waters.
Yes.
Motion is passed with a vote of 5-0.
Okay. Motion carries. Thank you. Is there anybody else from the public that wishes to speak at this time? Any other items the board wishes to, Ms. Hammond?
Yes. So in the interested parties notification, I wonder, and maybe this is just something staff can do, if we could get, besides the owner, well, I guess we have the owners and the addresses. Okay. Well, it's hard to identify. See, on one of them I saw North Central Neighborhood Association, on the one that came out on our agenda. And I thought, how could that be? And, well, anyway, I think there's a discrepancy. So I guess I will take that back and I'll just take it up with you privately as to what might have been the case there.
And if I may, just for the board's understanding, our application procedures were amended when the planning division took over the Board of Adjustment. The applicant is no longer obligated to submit a mailing list. Our mailing list is pulled by staff from our database that we utilize for all other public notices. So it is possible that what was pulled and provided by the applicant was inaccurate. We, however, did pull our own mailing list as we do for any other publicly advertised item. So that was what was in the online version. And it may have been that it was an error that it pulled a neighborhood association. I'll have to verify that with our GIS staff. Just so we are aware, you do have a meeting on March 12th. There is a single case that will be a stormwater variance. So it will be being delivered by our stormwater utility staff. We will be present. I will be present at that meeting, however, to handle the administrative functions of what we do. And as we had discussed this evening in work session, we do not have any additional work session related matters at this time to discuss. So it will just be a 7 p.m. meeting. On March 12th.
I would like to comment further on this. So what came out in the agenda shows addresses only, and what we are given in this packet by the applicant says the owners and the addresses. And so if we could be sure that what we get for us to peruse ahead of time and study would have the owners and the addresses.
We do not pull that information anymore, Ms. Hammond. That information, when we do our mailing lists, we do not pull ownership. Ownership information is, if I recall correctly, is not something that we pull. We have addresses. They are sent to property owner or occupant or tenant is how we address all of our mailings now. It only pulls, that's the way our system is set up.
Mr. Zender, does that have the... does that change actually? It sounds more inclusive than our traditional practice, because if we're notifying before, if we were simply going to property owner as opposed to occupant, then
it's we do not know, because we do not use the owner's name in any mailing. Mm-hmm. We don't know if it's an occupant, if it's being sent to a business address, or if it's being sent to a residence. So it is property owner. Or I believe the way that we do our envelopes, when we do the envelopes for the mailing, the envelopes are property owner or tenant, then it has the mailing address. If it's a neighborhood association, it may be to an intention of mailing of a neighborhood association. But other than that, I don't recall if we have that.
So as someone who typically sends the postcards and letters, the problem we were running into was that forwarding mail can be a problem. So let's say I live at this address and then I move. Well, in the goodness of their operations, the U.S. Mail Department is going to try and track me down and give me this notice, but I'm no longer the property owner of record. And so there were just challenges in that regard that we've best practices gone back and forth, and this tends to be the best one.
But if we're talking about a rental property, it's going to go to the tenant. It's going to go to that address. It's not going to go to the owner of that property.
It may or it may not go to that. The records we pull from are from the county assessor's records. They go to the property owner, the owner of record. So that may be somebody that lives in Ohio.
Okay.
So they're going to, so if you see an out of Columbia mailing address, it could be in Jeff City, it could be somewhere else. It's going to that property owner. And without having my code directly in front of me, the notification procedures of our code.
So it's not just going to the addresses around the subject property, which is what I thought I heard.
That was my understanding as well. So it is going to the owner.
It is going to the owner of all property within 185 feet.
Regardless of whether they're actually residing in that building, it'll find them on Earth.
Okay. That is correct.
And to the neighborhood question of record of interest and the ward council person.
That is correct, Ms. Hammond.
All right.
So, I will verify, in fact, that we are not pulling owner information, property owner information, the actual name of the owner. If we are, the way our system is set up, just so you understand, when we download or when we query for the mailing list, the mailing list is pulled by tax parcel ID number, and then it generates a series of other columned information. If, in fact, what we are doing is we are clipping the owner column out of what you are seeing and what we are producing, I will be more than happy to have the owner column put back in. It's typically something that I do normally in preparing that grouping of your public hearing ad, your property owner's and interest letter, and then the list. That is normally, I put those three documents together. So if we need to make a modification, we will be more than happy to accommodate that. But I think what Ms. Lewis provided is she was looking at an older application form and the way that she had actually submitted her application since we have actually taken over the procedure. I can guarantee you, though, as Mr. Waters asked me, were the parties in interest notified? Yes, they were notified. We are confident that that happened.
If it's just as easy to provide the owner column, I think it would probably be helpful and useful to the board. At least it would for me.
Yeah.
But we will see what we can do. I don't want to say that it can or can't be done. I just need to find out we do enough of these. My processes get mixed up, and I apologize for that. We'll verify what we're doing and try to address your concern.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Since we won't see you all until next month, happy True False weekend, and say your prayers tonight for some warm weather because I can only take so much more cold.
Okay, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
We're adjourned. Thank you.